Also at the Genetic Society autumn meeting, we heard from Scott Waddle from the University of Oxford, one of the scientific organisers of the conference. He's studying tiny fruit flies in order to figure out how they decide what to do when faced with conflicting choices. I asked him to explain what he's up to.
The general idea is to try and understand what the neural mechanisms are in the brain that allow an animal to do the right thing at the right time. We more often than not focus on hunger and thirst directed behaviour. So how does an animal approach food when it's hungry and not approach food when it's satiated? How does it look for a drink of water when it's thirsty rather than look for a piece of food? So how does it select and prioritise one behaviour over another?
Because I guess when it boils down to it, we eat, drink, sleep, reproduce. How do we decide what to do?
Exactly. So that obviously if all of these possibilities provide the animal with a conflict, you have to decide which of these potential things should I bother engaging at any given time. And of course, if they're more sleepy than hungry, then the thing they should do to promote their survival is to sleep rather than feed, and vice versa.
So how are you trying to understand what's going on here? What organisms are you looking at?
So we specifically use the fruit fly, and the reason for that is that the genetics and the small nervous system allow us to bring these mechanisms down to a cellular resolution, and the genetics in turn allows us to manipulate molecules within these circuits.
So what are you actually looking at? How do you test what's going on when a fly is making a decision what to do?
So typically we train flies with an odour accompanied with a food reward or an odour accompanied with a water reward. And then the thing that we actually measure is when given a choice between two odours, we ask which one do they prefer. And obviously in an experiment where we've rewarded one of the odours with food, we would expect them to approach that food-associated odour in the later test. And the same kind of thing is true for water-associated odours.
It seems incredible to me that something as small as a fruit fly and as simple, I guess, as an insect like that, you can train it to do something.
You can train them very well, and the memory that you form is incredibly robust, lasting a few days.
So how do you then try to go in at a molecular level and work out what's going on when they've learnt to distinguish and to go to the smell that they like?
So the molecular level was first approached actually with a classical mutagenesis approach. Like everything else in flies, people just mutagenize them. But instead of looking for morphological defects on the exterior, a damaged wing, a slightly strangely shaped eye or so forth, people screen for flies that couldn't learn or remember. People don't so often use that kind of approach now. Instead, we use genetic-based approaches that allow us to manipulate specific neurons. So, and these tools allow us to switch neurons on and off.
And what does a fly's brain actually look like? How do you study it and look inside at what's going on?
So we can just pop it out of the head capsule, kind of like shelling a pea, and look at it under the microscope. Or, in principle, we can also image neural activity in the brain of a live fly just by peeling off a little piece of the head capsule and looking at the brain with a microscope in the live animal.
So you kind of pin it down, you, for want of a better word, prize open its skull and look at what the nerves are doing?
Pretty much, yeah.
That seems quite fiddly to me.
It requires some skill, that's true.
So when you do this, when you're actually looking at the brain and seeing what's lighting up, what's it telling you about how flies are making these kinds of decisions in their life?
That's a difficult question. Depends which neurons you're looking at. So up until now, we've mostly looked at neurons that represent value, so a good or a bad event in the fly's life. And then we can see that certain neurons are activated by food rewards, for example. In other experiments, we've looked at neurons that are required for the flies to do the appropriate thing with its memory. So there, the assumption is that activation of that neuron is part of the process where the brain is making the appropriate decision to either run away from something or run towards something.
And in terms of actually starting to understand more general neural mechanisms, how organisms learn, do you think some of the things that you found out will apply in higher organisms like humans, mammals?
I'm quite sure. I mean, the conservation of genes tells us that many of the processes at least use conserved molecular mechanisms, and certainly some of the work we've done has uncovered conserved molecules, so the fly equivalent of neuropeptide Y, which is involved in energy homeostasis in mammals, is clearly involved in food-seeking related behaviours in the fruit fly. Dopamine, which is the known reward signal in the mammalian brain, is clearly the reward signal in the fly brain, and so on. So I think it's going to be generally informative.
We've heard at the meeting a lot of people talking about the idea of the n-gram, like where in the brain is this knowledge encoded. How close do you think we've got so far in uncovering it, and how long do you think it will be before we really understand how it works?
Well, I think I can be pretty optimistic here. So I think we have at least located a synaptic junction, a junction between two sets of neurons where the memory is probably represented. So I think that is essentially the n-gram, or part of the n-gram in the fly brain. So I think we've already gotten there. The question is, you know, what resolution can we actually get to? Can we say it's a specific synaptic connection? So yeah, I think it's only a matter of time.
And kind of philosophically, it's a bit strange to think that all the memories we have, everyone we've ever known, is just somehow written into the junctions between our nerve cells.
I find that quite reassuring that you can explain it rather than not. But yeah, some people...
It's no kind of spooky thing.
No, but some people are very uncomfortable with being able to explain their life and some sort of physical process in their brain, but it doesn't affect me that way at all.
What are you now trying to figure out?
We would like to know what the mechanisms are that are involved in changing the efficiency of these synapses. The same synaptic connection may be bidirectionally changed by either a pleasant learning event or an unpleasant learning event, and so we'd like to know how that difference is generated. And as I said, we're ultimately involved in trying to understand how the fly chooses whether to approach a food-relevant cue rather than a water-relevant cue, so that's a kind of higher integrative kind of mechanism, and we're very interested in potential individual differences between animals and how that's represented in neural circuit properties.
Scott Waddle from Oxford University.